The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters.
Everybody that has made comments has loved the show. The legal community's response was 10 times greater. I was shocked and delighted how many lawyers and people involved in the court system said, "This is incredible."
Hello, this is your host, Lauren Sobel, and thanks for joining us for another episode of The Hearing, where we like to share our conversations with interesting people in the legal world. This episode is a lesson in never giving up on your dream, even if it takes 50 years, and my guest is the epitome of why. I am talking about lawyer-turned-actor Alan Barinholtz, who starred as Judge Alan Rosen in the hit Amazon series, Jury Duty. In case you haven't heard of it, the show has earned an Emmy nomination. But the real story here is Alan, who wanted to be an actor even back in college. However, life led him to law school and being an attorney. For the next 40 years or so, Alan was a litigator, arbitrator, and dad to two sons who ironically have successful Hollywood careers themselves. I say ironically because remember, Alan himself wanted to be an actor. As you'll hear in the episode, though, with a bit of luck, a bit of patience, the support of his family, and loads of talent and litigation experience, Alan finally achieved his dream of being an actor at just about 70 years old and is now living it today. Alan's story is a fun one, but I think what made me love this episode so much was how incredibly genuine and down-to-earth Alan is, and not to mention, you can tell improv is definitely his forte. I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did.
The Hearing.
Welcome, Alan. We are so thrilled to have you here with us today. I'm super excited to talk to you. Since this is a legal podcast, I think it is safe to assume that you have something to do with the law, but you're not just another lawyer. You are a lawyer who has, among other things, played a judge on TV and in a pretty well-known Emmy-nominated Amazon show. But before we get there, let's start with your legal career. Tell us, how did you become a lawyer? Tell us about your legal background.
Hi, Lauren. Good morning. Thank you. I tend to expound, so cut me off when I do so. I graduated from Ohio State in 1973, so it's been over 50 years. I got a Bachelor of Fine Arts in theater because I wanted to be an actor. And when I graduated college, I did some acting and I did stand-up comedy for a couple of years. I think I made money once or twice. Then I got married in 74 and needed to make some money. So I became a salesman. I sold radio time over the telephone. The colloquial term for that is working in a boiler room. I was pretty good at it. 50 years ago, I think I was making $25,000 a year, which wasn't bad money at that time. I was having a drink one night with a buddy of mine who I went to high school with, and he was in his second year of law school, I believe at WashU in St. Louis. And he was telling me about law school, and I was thinking, boy, I'm doing well in sales and I'm doing some managing, and it'd be great to maybe get a law degree, not to practice law, but go to law school. And I said, I wouldn't mind going, but I'm 25 now, and I think I'm too old. And he said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, isn't law school like medical school, that the older you are, the more difficult it is to get in?" And he said, "I've got men and women in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And I'm giving my buddy a shout out. I always tell a story without mentioning his name. And his name is John Kuresh. And John is still practicing in the Chicago area." So I applied to a bunch of law schools locally. And I got accepted the day my older son was born. I got accepted to Loyola of Chicago, and I thought that was a good omen, and it was a great school. So I went to law school, and again, not with the intent of practicing law, but just having a law degree. And the dean, Dean Murdoch, gave the opening day speech, and from the moment I heard that speech, I was hooked, and I said, pardon me, I said, screw business. I want to be a lawyer. But the law is a business, obviously. But went to law school, kind of ate it all up and loved it, and started practicing. So I've been practicing now, I guess, going on my 44th year.
Wow. And so what kind of law do you practice?
So I preface it by saying I'm a civil trial attorney, and then the subcategory is primarily personal injury, medical malpractice. But I've tried commercial cases. I've tried cases in chancery court. I've even tried a small criminal case or two. Never a divorce. Never got involved in that.
Yeah, those are not fun cases to work on. Certainly not. So you're still practicing law.
I am. My practice now, for all intents and purposes, is limited to arbitration. I've been an arbitrator with AAA probably for at least 30 years. And I also am an arbitrator for FINRA, the organization that if you've got a beef, you know, with your money manager, your stockbroker, you have to file through FINRA. So I'm an arbitrator with them as well.
You practice law, you are an arbitrator, you're also a Hollywood actor. And that's not something that you hear every day. So tell us, one day you're a lawyer, next day an actor. How did this come about?
Great question. Both my sons are actors and writers, and they're pretty successful. My older son is an actor by the name of Ike Barinholtz. My younger son is John Barinholtz. They've been in TV and film, et cetera. And both the kids live out here in LA. So my wife and I would always go to LA for Thanksgiving, starting, I think, in 2010 when my younger son moved out here. And a few days before we were scheduled to go out in 2021, my older son called up and said, "Hey, you know so-and-so?" And it was a friend of ours. They said, "Sure, I know Allison." And he said, "Well, Allison works for a showrunner." And the showrunner asked Allison if she knew any judges or lawyers who were retired or semi-retired who had a little improv experience. And our friend Allison said to her boss, "Well, you probably know his sons, Ike and John Barinholtz, but Alan, he's our family lawyer back in Chicago. And when his boys would come back to Chicago to do improv, once in a while, he'd get up on stage and do it with them." So she contacted Ike. Ike called me and said, "Would you be interested in this?" I said, "What do I have to do?" He said, "Well, when you're here next week, we'll do a 1-minute tape. You know, you'll pretend you're a judge and we'll just improvise." And I said, "Yeah, sure. What the heck?" And my wife and my two sons, we went up in Ike's studio, and Ike said, "So what's your name?" And I said, "I'm so-and-so." I made up a Chicago name. I said, "I've been a judge of the Circuit Court of Cook County for over 25 years. And in my entire career, I've never seen anything like it." And then I just riffed about a case that had 3 mistrials. Oh. Next thing I know, I submitted it to the casting agency. And a day later, I got an email back saying, "You're a strong pin for the judge." And I said, "Great." Then I looked at my boys. I said, "What does that mean?" And they said, "Pop, they're really considering you for one of the roles in this TV show." And I said to my wife, I said, "I don't know if anything's going to happen, but what do you think?" She said, "Does it mean you getting out of the house for a while?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Absolutely. Absolutely." And then, yeah, about 6 weeks later, a couple of weeks before Christmas, I got a phone call from Jake Szymanski, who's the director of Jury Duty. He said, "Look," and at the time, Lauren, I was not living in Chicago. At the time, I was living in rural Ohio on a farm. And it was a farm that my wife grew up on. It was a family farm. I'm not a farmer. And he said, "I know you're living in Ohio. I actually know your older son. We like you. The issue is, are you willing to come out to LA for 2 or 3 months this winter?" And I said, "Do I get paid?" He said, "Yeah, it's not a lot of money, but I don't think you'll lose money." And I said to my wife, "What do you think?" And she said, "Get the hell out of here." And so then they chose me for this. And I was 2 years ago exactly, I was out in LA for February, March, and most of April doing the show.
Amazing. So the show is called Jury Duty. It is on Amazon Freevee. Because we have a global audience and you know, maybe there are people who are listening who maybe are not familiar with Jury Duty or the premise, can you tell us about Jury Duty? What's it about and what makes it unique?
So I guess shortly before we started rehearsals, probably 6 months, the producers, the creators sent out a blast to Craigslist or something like that, saying something to the effect of, if you've never served as a juror in a civil trial, we'll be shooting a documentary in Los Angeles where we have permission to film a trial. If you apply and you qualify, even if you're an out-of-state resident or an out-of-county resident, we will fly you here, we will put you up, and we'll pay you $400 a day. 2,500 people apply. And just for the record, I know back in Cook County, I don't know if the price has gone up, but I think they paid you $19 a day.
Yeah, I was going to say $400 a day, that at least for me would raise some red flag.
Yeah. And like I said, 2,500 people applied. Everybody in the show, with the exception of the person who was chosen from Craigslist, was an actor. Everybody. The person who was chosen, and it turned out to be this gentleman, Ronald Gladden, had zero idea that everybody in the show was in on this premise, if you will. And he was chosen, 29-year-old kid, real nice young man. He was in the solar business, living in San Diego at the time, and I think his business had just shut down. And everybody was unknown, with the exception of one actor. The actor was James Marsden, James is pretty much an international celebrity. And he was himself. He played James Marsden, an actor who was attempting to get out of jury duty. During the course of this trial, there were cameras that could be seen, but what Ronald didn't know, there were also hidden cameras. There were hidden cameras where the jurors deliberated. There were hidden cameras in the hallways. The only camera he was aware of, as far as I recall, were in the courtrooms. There was even where the jurors got sequestered. And in the hotel, there were cameras unbeknownst to Ronald. And so he sat for 3 weeks, presumably not realizing that this was not a documentary. It was more a mockumentary.
And so you did a real trial from the very beginning of a trial, jury selection, all the way through until the big reveal.
Yes. When you say real trial, no, it wasn't a real trial.
Simulated.
Yeah, a simulated trial. And yes. It was a civil case involving property damage to someone's business to the tune of a couple million dollars.
And you played the judge.
I did.
I will say I've worked very closely with judges in my career. I've been in the courtroom many times. I can say from experience that you really fooled me when I watched the show. I genuinely thought that you must be a judge in real life. So you blew me away. Were you nervous at all about playing a judge? Did you do anything to sort of study up on being a judge besides obviously your many years of litigation experience?
The short answer is no. Wow. I had been in front of hundreds of judges in my career, the nice ones, the mean ones, the smart ones, the not so smart ones, the political appointees, the men and women who earned their position through hard work. So I tried to channel all those judges, and I wasn't nervous at all except the last day. And I was nervous during the reveal because we had, and I was given the honor of letting Ronald know this was not a real trial. And I don't want to spoil it for some of your audience who haven't seen it, but I was nervous during that speech.
I was going to make a joke about puns and honor, but I'll refrain.
Okay.
So yes, I certainly don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. It is worth a watch. It's really incredible to think that, you know, it went on for several weeks,
yes,
and you were able to, you collectively, the show was able to pull off, you know, this mockumentary.
The hearing. You're an attorney with a passion to perform, a drive to be absolutely on your game. With superior resources, serious preparation, and total confidence. Be your best with Thomson Reuters Practical Law.
I'm Kim Vanell. Join me every morning for a roundup of what's happening at home and around the world. From the front line in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
To the heart of US politics.
When Trump said that he expected to be arrested, it seems like he was trying to get ahead of the story.
We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes. For your essential daily briefing, follow Reuters World News wherever you get your podcasts.
What has the legal community's reaction been to the show, at least, you know, things that you've been privy to?
It's the first of all, everybody that I've heard from, everybody that has made comments has loved the show. We never expected it to be as popular and critically successful as it was. I mean, you may know that we were actually nominated for an Emmy for Best Comedy, and we were at the Spirit Awards for Independent Productions, and we won the award for Best Ensemble in a New Show, which was great. The legal community's response was 10 times greater than the public response. I was shocked and delighted how many lawyers and people involved in the court system said, "This is incredible," from a good standpoint. It was great.
It truly, I agree with that wholeheartedly, and congratulations on you know, all the accolades. They are well deserved. Did you work longer days as a litigator or as an actor on jury duty, and which was more stressful for you, acting or litigating?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. I mean, I'm a trial attorney. So any person out there who tries cases for a living, you know, preparing for trial, I think that's 50% of the work or more. It's downhill, for want of better words, once the trial starts, if you're adequately prepared, but you're always on. And when I was preparing for trial, when I was on trial, 12-hour days were the norm. So it was hard work. And we had 12 and 14-hour days on the set. So, yeah, it was stressful in that respect. And trials can be boring. They can be long time when there's nothing going on, where there's breaks and stops and fits and starts. And that was the case with our show. And the thing about the show was, because it was live, because it was a secret, if you will, from Ronald, mm-hmm. the director was hidden. So you couldn't say, "Cut, can we do that again?"
Right.
And 85%, if not more, was straight improv.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Having seen the show, particularly amazing to know how much of it was improv.
Yeah.
I imagine that's also particularly stressful to try and keep it a secret, right, from this one person. So that's a twist on stress that you don't experience
True.
Necessarily in litigation. Just out of curiosity, do you keep in touch with anybody from the show?
Yes. So for 2 years now, I have been part of a Wordle group with five of the actors. And every day, maybe, you know, there's been a couple of days in the last 2 years where we've not communicated. Every day we communicate. And it could be as minimal as "good morning," and you post your score, or "how you doing? Oh, I have an audition. Oh, did you see this?" And yes, so we communicate, we keep in touch. And it was kind of a love fest this Sunday when everybody was there. So yes, it's great.
Great. So I think as lawyers, it's very ingrained for many of us to think of our identity as being a lawyer. And it's really something that can be hard to let go of, the identity of being a lawyer. When you Google your name, despite having spent more of your life as an attorney than an actor, the very first thing that comes up is your IMDb page, right?
So my question for you is, did you suffer any sort of identity crisis, or maybe less dramatically, you know, moments where you hesitated to make the switch from lawyer to actor and sort of give up your life as a full-time lawyer?
Short answer, no. Longer answer is, on my birthday 2 years ago, the show had already premiered about 3 weeks earlier. And we were out for brunch with my kids and their family. And my kids are saying, hey, did you see that dad is higher rated than us on IMDb? I guess it's called the star meter or something like that. Uh-huh. And there's a ranking. And for a week or two, I outrank both my sons.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was nuts.
That's amazing. So speaking of that, that was something else I sort of wanted to talk to you about. You know, often it's parents who are encouraging their kids to sort of make a big career change. In your case, it sounds like it was a little bit of a role reversal, and it was really your son sort of encouraging you to make this big change. So tell us about that. What did they think, you know, when you got the role, and you know, what tips did they give you? Did you go to them for acting advice?
So, yes. So the first thing when I got the offer a little more than 2 years ago, they said what you would be paid. And it wasn't a lot of money, but I knew that I had to spend money. I had to spend $3,000 to join the union. I had to rent a car, which, you know, for a few months cost several thousand dollars. For a while, I stayed at Airbnbs as opposed to my kids, because where we shot was far from my kids and I wanted to be pretty close. So, yeah, I had thousands of dollars in expense. And I said to the kids, I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to lose money. And their response was, even if you lose money, if you don't do this, it's a big mistake. And so I said, okay. And my kids have been my consiglieres ever since I've been out here. The best piece of advice is, Pop, watch what you say, because you're a personality now and it reflects badly on you and it could reflect badly on us.
Oh, that's a really good point. That's a good point. But I haven't heard anything so far that gets anybody in trouble.
Oh,
so.
You haven't heard from the delicatessen where I screamed about my sandwich wasn't good. No, I'm joking. So.
I was going to say, no, I hadn't heard about that. So before you were famous, did you attend events in Hollywood with your sons?
Yeah.
Or did you sort of stay out of that life?
My older son, Ike, when he moved out here, he was a cast member of Mad TV for 5 years. Prior to him being a cast member, he got cast in a company in Amsterdam called Boom Chicago. It's an all English speaking company. And it was started by four Northwestern graduates about 30 years ago. And it's pretty much improv and some sketch comedy. And when Ike went out there in 1999, the guys who he was out there with, the women who he was out there with, little known people like Seth Meyers and Jason Sudeikis and Kate Cannon.
Little known.
Brendan Hunt, who is Coach Beard on Ted Lasso. These guys all started out there. And then Ike moved to L.A. and he and Seth's brother Josh were cast on Mad TV, and my wife and I would always go out a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving. We'd always attend tapings. And then when Mad TV was done and Ike started getting involved in film, yeah, we went to red carpets. I was not on the red carpet. I watched my kid. Mm-hmm. And same thing, my younger son, John, was a cast member for all 5 or 6 years on Superstore and then another TV show called American Auto on NBC. So, you know, we would go and watch them film. And yeah, we've always attended films and events that they were invited to. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And when your kids first told you that they wanted to be actors, what were you hesitant to encourage them? What were your thoughts when they wanted to pursue acting? As somebody who wanted to be an actor himself.
Good question. My older son was a freshman at Boston University when he came home during spring break and said, you know, just in case you hear from the school, I haven't been going to class. And I don't know if they're going to ask me back for next year. And I took an acting course and I'd like to go to LA and be an actor. And my response was, well, you need a job, you need an apartment, and you need money. And mom and I will support you every way, but financially. He and I went out to LA. I've got a cousin in the film business, a filmmaker by the name of Adam Rifkin, who's about 5 years older than Ike. And he told Ike, I remember Ike was 19, and Adam said, you want my advice? You should move out here now because you're not getting any younger. And I wanted to strangle my cousin, but that's when I said to Ike, yeah, move out here, but this is what you need. And so we went back to Chicago, and he got involved in the improv community. And the answer to your question is, for about 2 weeks, I was upset that he wasn't going back to college because mm-hmm. I was more concerned what my colleagues and friends would say. And then I realized, wait a second, respectfully, screw them. It's more important what my kid wants. And I wanted to be an actor and I wanted to be in theater. And I'm not going to stop his dream. He's a good kid, and let him do what he wants. And so I was delighted when he achieved some success. So,
yeah. And imagine what your colleagues and friends say now, right? Both about you and your sons. So it's great.
There is one lawyer that he was a parent at the school where Ike went. And I remember when Ike dropped out of college, he said, I heard your kid dropped out of college, blah, blah. And yeah, I was, you know, I bit my tongue, but now, like, you know, twice a year, he says, oh, I just saw Ike on Jeopardy. That's great. Oh, I just saw your kid. So it's kind of a reversal, if you will.
Amazing. Amazing. So you mentioned before that you lived on first in Illinois and then on a farm in Ohio,
correct.
In rural Ohio, the Midwest. Now you live in LA, you're living the Hollywood life. So, so I guess my question to you, you made this big career change later in life.
Right.
You also moved your life across the country and now live in LA.
Yeah.
It's probably a bit different, right? Living in LA than Ohio and Illinois. What's life like in LA compared to living in the Midwest? And did you experience any culture shock?
Well, so when you say Illinois, just for the folks who live out of the country, I'm a Chicagoan. Born and raised in Chicago, and Chicago is a major metropolitan international city. I love Chicago. But 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I left Chicago, lived on a farm for 5 years. That was the culture shock. after the show's success, while we were still doing some touch-up work, if you will, I was out here and my wife said, hey, you know, just so you know, we're moving to LA before the end of the year. And that was in 2022. And I'm thinking, why? Because, and then this is before the show premiered. This was in 2022. And I said, really? And my younger son, we just had our first grandson. And when he was born, when we were filming the show, he was born deaf. And my wife said, we've got to be out here to, you know, to help the kids with whatever they need. And so it had really nothing to do with show business. It really, my younger son has two kids. My older son has three kids. I've got five grandkids. And I said, yeah, I guess I could leave the farm. I loved the farm. But then when we moved to LA, it was wonderful. In so many respects, I felt like I was back in Chicago just from a socialization standpoint, just from a food standpoint. But the best part, aside from being, you know, within 15 to 30 minutes from my kids, was it was the first time in my life that I did not encounter winter.
Ah, yes. And the Chicago winter is not a fun winter, for sure.
True.
Do you get stopped on the street out in LA? Do people, you know, recognize you and sort of sing the praises of jury duty?
Mostly I get stopped when I'm blocking their running path. And they tell me to get out of their way. But yeah, I can't, not as much as James Marsden, but occasionally, I mean, I'll be at a bakery ordering something and someone will come up to me and this happened. They said, you know, until I heard your voice, then I looked at you. Then my voice apparently has some recognition. It was kind of distinctive. So yeah, I've had people say, love you in jury duty. My grocer, the manager of my local Ralph's, the first time I was checking out, he said, were you the judge in jury duty?
Wow.
And he calls me judge every time he sees me now. It's great.
That's great. That's great. So you've played a judge now. You've been a lawyer your whole life. Are there any other roles that you want to play, maybe outside of a courtroom or a non-lawyer related role that you have in mind?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, sure. Listen, if the opportunity comes up I'm shooting next week. There's a 10 episode unnamed basketball comedy on Netflix that they've cast me in 3 episodes, and I have no idea where they got this from, but they cast me as the family Jewish attorney. And I may have to go study law to understand how to play that part. Mm-hmm. But if my comment was, I love the show Bosch, the detective show. And I said, I'll play anything on Bosch. I'll play a dead body. I don't really care. And, then when we were on strike last year, I walked with my older son to the picket line, and the first person I encountered was Titus Welliver, who was Bosch, and my jaw just dropped. And he must have thought they let me out of an asylum because I was so gaga over this guy. But yeah, whatever they want me to do, I'm up for the challenge.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So that's very exciting, by the way. Congratulations on the Netflix series. I look forward to watching that. Before I let you go, as somebody who has made a significant career change after, you know, decades to pursue a lifelong passion, do you have any sage wisdom or advice that you can share for others who maybe think it's impossible? They're stuck at a big law firm. They want to do something completely different, but they feel like there's no hope. What would you say to them?
Be patient. You know, if 30 years ago, when I'd been practicing law for, you know, 13 or 14 years, and I had 2 kids who were young, if someone said, hey, you know, 14 years ago, you graduated with a theater degree and you did some stand-up comedy, and then you decided to go to law school, do you regret, you know, giving up your passion? And no one asked me that question. But then fast forward to about 10 years ago, when my kids were achieving success and people knew of my background, and their question was, well, you know, looking at your kids, do you regret not, you know, not staying with theater, not staying with acting? And my response was, no, I'm getting my kicks vicariously through my kids. And now if someone said, what do you think? Now I would say, hey, you know what? I've been patient for close to 50 years, or I've been rehearsing for almost 50 years. And you got to do what you love. I was fortunate that I really loved practicing as an attorney. I mean, notwithstanding aggravating clients, notwithstanding aggravating judges, I love and loved the law. And I guess I've kind of come full circle. And you know, I consider myself a pretty lucky guy. So don't give up. I'm going to be 73 in April. I'm in good health. And I want to play this out as long as I possibly can. And then if there's a chapter 4, if that just means having a martini and saying goodbye to my family, and that's 25 years from now, that's okay too.
Well, hopefully it's playing a detective and a role on Bosch as your fourth chapter. But Alan, you are wonderful. You attribute things to luck, but also you are an amazing actor. You are a lovely human being. And
thanks,
thank
Lauren.
You so much for spending time with us today. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Well, I enjoyed speaking with you. This is great. Thank you guys so much.
The Hearing.
Thanks so much for spending time with us today. If you like what you heard or want to hear more, please subscribe to our podcast. You'll be automatically notified when a new episode comes out. Please also consider leaving us a review. This helps other like-minded people find our podcast. We would also love to hear from you in other ways. We truly welcome your guest and topic ideas. So if you have any suggestions or you just want to say hi, drop us a line at thehearing@tr.com.
The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters. To find out more, go to tr.com/thehearing or subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.